Well, all right, everybody out there in Turdville, this is your friend the Turd coming at you with a special Labor Day weekend edition of the TFMR podcast. Today we have a special treat. I know over this next weekend there's going to be a lot of grilled hamburger and grilled hot dogs, and today we get a little grilled jackass on the side, as by special request of several Turdites, I've been able to track down the golden jackass himself in his hidden bunker somewhere on the globe. We'll just leave it at that, because I don't think he's living yet on a lunar colony. But I suppose that if we live long enough, Jim, that's where we'll go. Yes. Anyway, Jim, my friend, thank you for coming back into Turdville and spending some time with us. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm bored as heck with the markets. I mean, this precious metals market has been consolidating for over a year. It's boring as can be. I can't even put it in words. I can honestly say that on a given week, I might not check the gold price more than three times. I used to check it three times in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I check it now three times per week because it is so boring. You know, we got so many things going on right now, but they're all in the background, and they're really not in the COMEX market. But the biggest item coming right down the pike in a very big way is Morgan Stanley imploding. This is not an event, say, a year from now. This is an event, if I had to put a time frame on it, I'd say it's probably in the next 1 to 4 months.
That's pretty soon.
Next 2 or 3 weeks, 2 or 3 months. What started it for me was one of my subscribers, you know, I got a bunch of them, and believe me, they're just full of information at times. This one guy sent me a note saying, Jim, I got a best friend whose father is a fund manager in Morgan Stanley. He's been there for like 20 years. He just sold all of his stock. Everybody at Morgan Stanley is talking about bugging out and how the firm is destined to collapse real soon. So I wrote him back and said, try to get any more information that you can. And he said, okay. Over the weekend, he got absolutely nothing. Hmm. The guy clammed up. The father of his friend clammed up. But word has it that there are dozens and dozens of fund managers who are preparing their resumes, who are selling their lifetime, I call it legacy stock if they've held it for over 10 years.
Right.
This is stock that they've had for so long. You know, you can't even say that it's gone up, you know, 40 times in value over 30 years, because in the last 2 years, 3 years, it's gone down 70% and 80%.
Yeah.
But I try to put two and two together. There are two enormous concepts that I think present a billboard of risk. Now, we've been following the MF Global case. We've been following the PFG, the Peregrine Financial Group case. It's of brokerage accounts for futures contracts being stolen.
Yep.
They use the word rehypothecated. I use the word stolen.
Theft. How about fraud?
Because, well, for a very good reason. Because they're stolen. They're segregated private accounts that are stolen. Let's not mince words here. They're stolen. And they've been blessed by the appellate court, which acted on a two-year-old or three-year-old case called Sentinel Management Group,
mm-hmm.
that basically said, well, you know, you can't prove criminal intent, therefore these accounts go missing and that's the way it goes. What they did not address is that they're segregated accounts. They're being treated like from a financial firm and not a stock broker, not a brokerage firm. The brokerage laws for bankruptcy are very clear. Segregated accounts are first in line. All these different cases are being pushed in a way, settled in a way, as though they're a financial firm, like some investment firm. No, this is a brokerage firm.
Right.
All right, so what we might see, you know, I thought there might have been about 300,000 in accounts because there's 17,000 stockbrokers at Morgan Stanley, but my friend the Turd straightened me out. If you figure that there are 200 accounts per broker, you got over 3 million. You got 3.5 million, perhaps, accounts with Morgan Stanley. And bear in mind that years ago, they folded in a big merger, Dean Witter and Smith Barney.
Yep.
So it's the largest brokerage house in the country, if not the world. I don't know about Germany, but it's pretty damn big. Now,
Jim?
I've been saying we're going to get jumps to the brush fires. You know, we go from LIBOR to money laundering to allocations to improper derivative usage. But the brush fires, I think, are going to jump from perhaps the standard platform of futures accounts to stock accounts. Can you honestly tell me that if Morgan Stanley fails, can you honestly say that millions of stock accounts will be preserved?
Well, Jim, if I can interrupt you, I want to kind of ask you two questions along those lines. One, do you have a sense or do you have a rationale as to why Morgan Stanley would suddenly be in such trouble? I know I kind of speculated on my site the other day that just as J.P. Morgan lost billions, literally billions of dollars when the 10-year backed up in the spring, that maybe Morgan Stanley's derivative book is bringing them down. And then two, here would be my follow-up question. You know, Merrill Lynch is the largest brokerage firm, personal broker firm, if you will, in the U.S., maybe in the world, I'm not sure, but about the same amount, 17, 18, maybe 20,000 financial advisors. And when Merrill Lynch was going down the tubes 4 years ago, they were handed off to Bank of America and absorbed by Bank of America to keep them, you know, keep the train rolling. So the part two of this question is, if Morgan Stanley goes down based on whatever, you know, might be causing it, I mean, is there any chance that they, you know, that they could hold off this express of rehypothecated accounts all of a sudden being at zero by somehow being absorbed by a Wells Fargo or someone like that? Any thoughts on that?
No way in hell.
That pretty well sums it up.
Well, I'll tell you why. A number of reasons why. Since 2008, are any of these banks stronger?
No, that's just it. Yeah.
No, they're not. Are any of their positions stronger? I don't think so either. So what has improved for them to be able to withstand another storm? Nothing.
Yeah.
They're all weaker. They're suffering from grotesque insolvency. And what's gone worse for them is the European sovereign bond situation. I mean, what broke the U.S. and their back for the banking industry in 2008 was the mortgage bonds. Well, now on top of that, you've got U.S. exposure in
Jim.
States has great exposure in their banks to Europe. There was a period of time, it was before the early 2011 dollar swap facility. I had to guess it was around February of 11. For about a 4 or 6 month period before then, the Federal Reserve was on the sidelines, and New York banks were extending all kinds of swap facilities, swap contracts, taking in Spanish, Italian, and Greek bonds, French bonds too, and they got saturated to the point where they begged the Fed to take over. That's what prompted the February or March 2011 setup, establishment of the dollar swap facility from the U.S. Fed to Europe.
Right.
What that means, Turd, is that they've got huge exposure to Europe, the New York banks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's new since 2008. That weakened them further.
Even worse, you're right.
Right. Now, let me just switch answers. It's the same question but different answer. I think you surmise correctly. Morgan Stanley, I believe, is a little bit bigger than J.P. Morgan in interest rate swaps. And here's why. In the office of the comptroller to the currency, they had a third quarter 2010 report, and it's very delayed. I've mistakenly said that it was the second half of 2010. Now, Rob Kirby straightened me out. I need to be straightened out. It's a tremendous amount of details that one has to keep track of and sort out. Well, sometimes it's hard. The delayed reporting to the OCC of derivatives from commercial banks and total banks is delayed. But in the first half of 2000...
Nuts, there's another cutout.
2010. Isn't it interest rate derivatives? I'm sorry, what?
We're having cutouts, Jim, and I'll make sure, and I want to point this out to all the listeners, if they didn't read the text that I'll include with this podcast. Jim and I have been trying all day to get a decent Skype connection, so I just want to apologize for when he occasionally cuts out. But Jim, just keep on talking, and everyone will just have to deal with where you disappear.
In the 2010 first half, it was quite interesting. J.P. Morgan had a trivial amount, maybe a few trillion. No, I'm sorry, maybe a few hundred billion. These numbers are so big. J.P. Morgan had a relatively small increase in their interest rate derivatives for the first half of 2010. Bear in mind, that is precisely when the so-called flight to safety happened, and the U.S. Treasury 10-year went from 3.5% down to 2% in the space of 6 months. Are you kidding me? That's not a flight to safety. It's an imposition and installation of the interest rate swap machinery. During the same time that J.P. Morgan had a rather small amount on interest rate derivatives, Morgan Stanley was reported to having put on $8 trillion of interest rate swaps. Interest rate derivatives, and they're probably over 90% interest rate swaps. All right. Well, if J.P. Morgan is having interest rate swap problems that they grudgingly admitted to in May and June, remember they first said that they had sovereign bond problems, and you and I, Turd, we dissected it and said, oh, no, wait a minute. They had instability in the 10-year bond.
Yeah.
And support mechanism for that, it's going to be under great stress. Well, gee, how about multiplying that by 10?
Yeah.
And that's what Morgan Stanley's dealing with. But they could also have been maybe one of the bigger loan lenders to Europe before the March and February Fed dollar swap facility was extended to Europe. Now, I don't know if I cut out there, but in the beginning, in the last few months of 2010, and the first couple months of 2011, Wall Street extended a huge amount of swap loans to European banks. And I'm thinking they took on a lot of collateral of Spain, France, Italy, and Greek bonds. So all these Wall Street banks are vulnerable.
Yeah.
To claim that they're not ignores the entire swaps that were extended before they begged the Fed to take over. And when the Fed took over, they extended another $2.5 trillion. So how much did Wall Street extend before the Fed started extending dollar swap facilities in March of 2011? I'm thinking they extended a good trillion or more. So I'm thinking Morgan Stanley is dead meat.
It could, it could be any one of these things would be sufficient to bring them to their knees and wipe them out.
Yeah, I mean, they've been rotten and solvent for a long time. Now they've got illiquidity problems, and people wonder, where's the illiquidity coming from? Well, they've got these derivatives that have margin calls. They have leverage positions of all kinds of things, like contracts linking gold to the dollar, contracts linking the treasury bond in the United States to treasury bonds in Southern Europe, or treasury bonds to the Bund, in Germany. They got all these leverage contracts. Well, when they start going bad, just like a futures contract that you might have, they have to post more margin. And that means more cash. And they don't have much cash. And that goes directly at the attack on the money market funds. Money market funds are the liquidity source for the big banks that are having big problems, and that's why they're putting restrictions. But we'll get to that later.
Well, now, and let's take it from there. I mean, obviously, there are, as you said, there are plenty of different things that could cause be the straw that breaks the camel's back, in a sense, at a place like Morgan Stanley. But as that relates then to the gold trade and the bullion banks, you mentioned the term margin call, didn't you? That when you have these swaps and these derivative trades go against you, the other side wants to get paid off, but they don't necessarily want to get paid off in dollars for any one of a number of reasons. And I know when we've talked in the past, you've speculated that instead the other side of those trades may be taking some gold off of the hands of these big banks. Still feel that way?
Yeah, I've been trying to piece together about 15 bits of information from my best source, who's been around for 4 years, tipping me off on all kinds of things, like the entire Lehman Brothers collapse 30 days in advance. I had notice on that. He's been so spot on so many things. He tipped me off on the Dubai debt failure a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. He tipped me off on the Greek bonds, and I said, that's going to spread. He's German. I call him Mein Herr. I said, Mein Herr, that's going to spread to Italy and Spain. He said, no doubt, and it'll take everybody off guard. Well, he started telling me in March and April that the big banks, he calls them the cartel banks, and, you know, they're the usual suspects from, you know, gold manipulation. They're, right. You know, Barclays and RBS and Citigroup and Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan, all the big guys, and Deutsche Bank.
And Deutsche Bank.
And Societe Generale, SocGen in France. I don't know of any bank that's been named in Spain that participates like that. But here's what he's been saying. That these big cartel banks are under the gun. And I said, who's got them under the gun? He said, well, let me just say they're from the East. I said, China? He said, well, they're from the East, many from China, but it's more than that. I said, Russia? And he said, look, they're from the East. I said, okay. I said, well, what is the nature of the transaction? And he said, well, these are big leveraged transactions. Of many different types. And I said, are they currency? Are they French, Spanish, Italian, Greek bonds? And he said, all the above. And I said, what's different about them? And he said, the margin. I said, okay, well, how do you mean? And I said, well, in the margin calls, they can't just hand over cash. And I said, well, why not? And he said, well, they've got to hand over gold. And I said, why? And he said, it's the nature of the contract. I said, why? And he said, it's the way it is. I can't tell you anymore. Okay. Well, that's, you know, take that as a big bit of information.
Yeah.
Then 2 months later, here we are in maybe July, and he says 5,000 metric tons have been removed from the cartel banks. I said, wow, you sure that's not 500? He said, no, 5,000.
That's a lot.
I said, how do you know? Are you part of this? And he said, yes. I said, so you're part of the process where they make margin calls, ring the doorbell on someone like Barclays or J.P. Morgan and say, we want your effing gold? And he said, yes. I said, well, why can't they just pay him with cash? He said, it's the same question as you asked before. It's not the nature of the contract. So he's giving all these bits of information. Now he's telling me that there are 6,000 metric tons that have departed the Western banks. By that, he means Western Europe, London, and New York. And it's been shipped to Asia, to the East, and he won't say anything more. All he's actually done is saying, yeah, okay, if you want to think of them as 80 to 90% Chinese, fine. That's probably not far off. Okay, so, you know, put some little mathematics in here and try to deduce what the heck is going on. You tell me, what kind of a leveraged trade cannot be satisfied on a margin call with cash?
Well, it's off the books, apparently, wouldn't you say?
Okay, it's off the books, and why is it off the books?
They don't want it seen by the regulators or anybody else.
Okay, but what else could it be?
Jim?
Could it be crime?
Well, conceivably, yeah.
Okay, could it be improper use of allocated gold accounts?
That would be something you'd want to conceal, yes.
That could very well be what happened, because if they can only satisfy their margin calls when they're underwater on their leverage trades in the Forex and the bond markets, or in gold and silver, whatever, if they can only satisfy with delivery of gold to their counterparty, then gold was used for the margin.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was used improperly.
And can't you see, too, Jim, a situation where, I mean, you and I know the fallacy of unallocated and allocated gold. Most everybody listening to this knows the fallacy of it. If you were a big Eastern power. Clearly, you're aware of this as well, and you know that eventually, whether it's a week from now, a year from now, or whatever, eventually that entire game of musical chairs is going to stop. And so therefore, why would you not want to be the first in line to extract real gold from the system?
Oh, I think you'd want to be first in line. I disagree on one point. It's not exactly a fine point. I know your listening audience is a lot brighter than most, but I would imagine that a good 20, 30, 40% of your listeners don't know what an allocated gold account is.
I hope it's not that high. I think most people understand allocated versus unallocated and paper versus physical and whether, you know, where you hold it and it is.
I think they understand paper versus physical gold, but an allocated gold account, okay, I'm Mr. X and I've got, you know, third generation money.
Right.
And my family is worth $2.1 billion. And my family has got three different bullion bank accounts with a total of $400 million worth of allocated gold. We know our serial numbers. We have our brokers. We know where it's located. We have photographs of it. And we have a listing of our entire exhaustive serial numbers for our bars. That's an allocated gold account. My belief, firmly, and this is validated with my source, the gold trader, Mein Herr, the bullion banks have improperly accessed some of Mr. X's gold without his permission. He doesn't have those certain serial numbers. They're all gone. Maybe not his entire collection, but maybe half to three quarters of all of his bars are gone. And, you know, 10 years, 20 years will pass without ever asking to see the bar. That's the problem.
Right.
So the banks go and lease the bar, use the bar, sell the bar, and I believe use it as margin posted for, say, you know, French, Italian, and Spanish and Greek bonds that all went bad. And now they're caught with their pants down, improperly using Mr. X's gold, and it's a crime to use allocated
gold. Absolutely.
Bank fraud.
Well, and Jim, I think I certainly understand, and I would actually be surprised if that hasn't been taking place, not only recently, but for years. And the thought being, well, we can lease this gold out or we can deliver this back because we will get it back. And that was the significance that when I reported a couple of months back that I had it on very good knowledge that Eastern powers, the Chinese specifically, were taking London LBMA good delivery bars, 400-ounce form, and shipping them not to their own vault, but taking them directly to refiners in Switzerland and in China and recasting them in 1-kilogram bars with official government insignia on them. That gold is not coming back. And that I think, is what's lost on, I guess we'll call them the powers that be, but it plays right into what you're suggesting, that this next major scandal is the allocated gold that people think, hey, no, this is actual allocated gold. Guess what? No, it's not there either.
Well, you know, 2 years ago, my same source warned me, and I warned all my Hat Trick Letter subscribers, and I actually have a couple of personal friends who are subscribers who moved their gold out of Switzerland 2 years ago from the warning that allocated accounts were being raided. And they're very grateful that they have their gold. And one was with the ZKB, the Zurich Cantonal Bank, that one of their funds they claim is a legitimate exchange-traded fund. Well, it's a bunch of horse
yeah.
manure.
Yeah.
Right there in the fine print, showed to my friend, it says, if deemed necessary, ZKB maintains the right to liquidate in cash. Even though everything is allocated and everything is invested with bars and it's all hunky-dory, you want to liquidate, you have to liquidate in cash. Well, that tells me it ain't allocated.
No kidding.
Okay. Well, what he then relayed to me was a progression of lawsuits in Switzerland. And now he says, here we are 2 years later, he said, Jim, there are hundreds of them. They've become two or three massive class action suits. They're not permitted to go into the news from non-disclosure clauses, different laws in Switzerland. They got
Just another quick break here.
Screwball Larson process. But are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. In Switzerland, they've got multiple class action lawsuits totaling multiple billions, like $2, 3, 4 billion in progress now for improper usage of allocated gold accounts. So we're already into the gold allocated account scandal. It just hasn't gone public yet.
How is that not news? How, are they that effective at cloaking that within the borders of Switzerland?
Well, let's suppose you're not Mr. X, but Mr. B, and you've got this giant account in a Swiss bank, and you realize, hey, half of my gold's gone, and you give me these lousy paper certificates. And they say, well, you know, you can file a lawsuit, but within the statutes of Swiss banking laws, you must adhere to the following non-disclosure clauses, or else your case is thrown out.
Then you're really screwed.
So you've got to maintain the rules. Switzerland is another world.
Yeah.
I mean, I was told, this is when I had my first serious death threat. I was told, because when I was given the threat, I said, okay, are you through? I was insolent. I said to him 10 times, do you have your Homeland Security business card? And he said, no, I don't work for them. I said, well, you certainly sound like you do. And he said, no, no, I don't. So when he was done threatening with a bullet at the back of my head, if I continued talking about the Nazi themes regarding 9/11, I said, well, okay, if you're done, can I start asking you questions? And he said, sure, knock
really?
Yourself. And I said, is it true that in the Swiss court system, if the aggrieved defendant, if the person being accused as a defendant, who's got charges of theft or whatever, robbery of bank accounts, whatever, going back to World War II or whatever, if they produce an old German Reich passport, does the court throw out the entire case? And he said, yes. How did you know that? And I said, I just do. I've got sources in Europe. So theft is legal in Switzerland if you've got an old German passport. He said, yes. That's alarming.
What? No, I'm sorry. The significance of that is lost on me. And so I figure if that's lost on me, I better have you go into a little more details. What does that mean specifically?
Well, it means that if you're over 80 years old and you were a young man with a German Reich passport in 1930s,
right,
you can steal all the money you want in the Swiss banks. And when it gets to the courts, you show your old German Reich passport and the whole case is thrown out. And my question to my source has been, aren't these guys all dead? And he said, no, not all of them. Some of them are, you know, they're not in wheelchairs, but they're very infirmed, they're weak, but they have sons. And when the sons are involved in the court case, they produce grandpa's German Reich passport, and the whole thing is thrown out as long as they can prove that the elder patriarch is still alive. And I'm wondering, maybe they don't have to prove that the elder patriarch is still alive.
And is that then, Jim, is that, I mean, is that an, I mean, are these old Nazis that are have taken up residence?
Exactly. Okay. You catch my drift.
God, I'm just a little slow. I'm sorry. It was Friday afternoon.
Reich passport.
I mean, because you wouldn't be, okay, all right, I'm with you.
And you know, you get into very sensitive third rail stuff.
Jeez.
When you bring in religious elements.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe a gigantic merger took place between Nazis and another group, and they settle in Switzerland, and they live under one motto, profit is good.
Yeah.
And they don't have these big conflicts anymore, and no one gets persecuted anymore. And since they got involved in the banks, they set some rules. And I don't even want to give the name of the rule. It's an anti-something.
I think we ought to just...
And it's really amazing. But in addition to the anti-whatever rule, they have the privilege of pulling out their old German Reich passports and the case is thrown out for the thefts.
Wow.
Now, I believe what we've got going on now with these allocated gold account pilferage, borrowings, call it whatever you want. They like to use the word lease.
Right.
I mean, gosh, if you break into a home, turd, and you steal a few diamond necklaces, don't you like to put a little IOU on it when you leave their little box in the wall that you broke open with your high-powered equipment and your big, powerful drills? Don't you like to put a little piece of paper in there saying, yes, this little piece of paper with Turd Ferguson in August 2012, it's good for 18-carat diamond necklace. It's an IOU in paper for the theft.
And as long as I return to you a reasonable facsimile of that necklace at some point in the future, you can't do anything to me.
And as long as I also have the right to do that forever.
Yeah, forever. Yeah.
Let's just keep rolling that on, rolling it and rolling. Oh, my God. Anyway, you catch the drift.
Yes.
We got the allocated gold accounts. And let me put some numbers on this. 2 years ago when the voice, I call him the voice, mine hair, I don't like to give away his identity or his company or anything.
Understood.
And he doesn't want it either. But when mine hair described this problem, he focused on ZKB. ZKB, Zurich Cantonal Bank, is one of the major targets of the class action lawsuits in Switzerland. And this is going to tear apart the entire Swiss banking system. They've got their mortgage bonds that they bought into from the U.S. They've got their private accounts that have vanished, left country because of the UBS controversy and a lot of false information regarding that. And they've also got their gold games that have gone sour. Well, 2 years ago when the voice brought this up, mein Herr said to me, Jim, we're talking about at least 20,000 metric tons.
Jeez Louise.
That is primarily borrowed illegally, leased, used, and taken and sold, replaced with certificates, gold certificates, from Swiss banks, from allocated accounts. So get your clients out of there while there's still some gold to be redeemed.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. By autumn of 2010, he called me again and said, the door is shut. There's no more gold for your clients or any of the other clients to redeem in. It's all gone. Now, forward to 2011. A year ago, he said, no, now it's 40,000 tons. Now, a year later, here we are in the present, summer of 2012, he says, it is minimum 40,000 tons, probably closer to 60,000 metric tons.
That's out of the allocated accounts that is now moved somewhere else, points to other offshores to other buyers.
Yeah, and you can be guaranteed that Wall Street executives own quite a few private accounts with that gold.
Well, Jim, let's. I want to segue, if I could,
Let's conclude. When this scandal comes out, and it will, and it's starting.
Yeah.
I think it's going to leak out of Switzerland. I think it's going to leak into Germany from Switzerland, or maybe to France from Switzerland, or Belgium from Switzerland, the neighboring countries. Belgium's not a border country, but
still,
it's close enough. It's big money, and big money is pissed off.
Yeah.
So when this thing comes public, it's going to be rather well known that these cartel banks are going to have to cover 40 to 60,000 metric tons of gold or go to jail. And that's how I think we get way past 5,000 per ounce gold.
Well, and that's where I was going.
It's coming.
That's my segue. I mean, I think most people would think, well, they could probably just continue this scheme indefinitely. And part of that scheme is...
Well, until they can't find any more.
Exactly, so, exactly.
Here's the other question. Sorry. When they satisfied with 6,000 metric tons in March, April, May, and June, July, 6,000 metric tons went east. Where did it come from?
In this case, it came out of all the LBMA vaults.
Well, it also probably came out of the Bank of England, which is a lot more dry than they want to be.
Could easily come out of the Fed. Came out of the BIS, leases gold.
Yeah.
IMF. We're having a little break here again. Everybody stand by. I would think.
No, Rome.
Rome. Oh, from the Vatican?
Oh, gosh. That's a word I never like to talk about.
All right.
So they got a lot of gold out of Basel, Switzerland. They took a lot of gold out of allocated accounts. They took a lot of gold from a certain location in Rome. Okay, well, what happens when those sources say, no mas?
Right.
We have
right.
no more bars for you.
Right.
Then these cartel banks are going to be left hanging on their vine with their testicles hanging out. And they're going to be extremely vulnerable. And I've been asking this one question regarding justice for as long as I've known Mein Herr. When are we going to start seeing some justice? When's the prosecution going to come? And he said way back in 08 and 09, oh, who knows, we might see some Nuremberg banker trials someday. But it'll take a few years because these people have to be exposed for what they've done. And I thought, well, that sounds like a really nice concept. I'd like to tune in to like the Watergate trials, except it's Nuremberg bankers on trial. And I said, well, gee, aren't they all going to get executed? And he said, oh, some will cut deals because they know so much. Well, this spring he completely changed his tune and said, Jim, they're not going to be any Nuremberg trials. They're just going to vanish.
As in Batman, your choice is exile or death by exile.
or perhaps residents at the bottom of the Caribbean Sea in undersea prisons that already have, I'm hearing, over 500 different people there now.
That may be a that's an interesting topic, Jim.
Well, it's not one that I wish to expound on. There's no follow up.
Well, then let me go. Let me ask you one more question then. As I promised you, and I promised everybody else that we'd keep it brief. But you know, as you and I both know, we could talk all afternoon. But this does dovetail into, I think, what will ultimately force the hand. Because again, the question is, okay, yes, if all this has been going on for years, the leasing and the raiding of the allocated accounts, why can't it just continue? And the reason is, as I mentioned earlier, and as you have mentioned earlier, the gold is flowing east, and I am 100% confident that sometime in the near future, the Chinese, either by themselves or working with consortium with maybe India or Russia or whomever, are going to offer the world a new gold-backed asset for trade settlement, global trade settlement, that will supplant the dollar, and it will force some type of gold sound money policy upon the West as well, which would be terribly inflationary. Now, that said, once this happens, it will then become clear how much gold is not there, how little gold remains, if any, in the West. And that's when this hand will be forced. You talk about this often yourself, about a new potential gold-backed global trade settlement system. And that's the ultimate goal of the collection of all of this gold, or at least one of the goals of the collection of the gold. Anyway, that's my opinion. Where are you on all that, Jim?
I agree.
Fair enough. We'll just call it a day.
The same source has told me for 2 and 3 years, whatever you read about China adding to their official gold reserves, multiply it by a number between 10 and 20.
Right.
And I said,
right.
What are they up to? I said, they up to – and then a year ago I started catching on. I said, are they going to make a gold-backed yuan? He said, eventually, yes, but first they must make it convertible. You can't go from a private, you know, secure currency that's not convertible to this global gold-backed. No, you got to go through convertible first, where it's got to be easily converted to British pounds, Australian dollars, U.S. dollars, whatever, euros, Swiss franc. So they're building up their gold reserves, and they're going to be introducing a convertible yuan. But they've been giving some hints lately on some things. At a recent G20 meeting, I think this was around June, can't be certain, but June, give or take 30 days, China announced, we are willing to post our $3.2 trillion in reserves as a fund, to serve as a core for a fund that would facilitate global trade, and we would work toward a non-dollar settlement system. Wow. The U.S. has got its exchange stabilization fund, and they're working feverishly behind the scenes to stabilize the money market funds. Mm-hmm. So you've got the U.S. with its funds in reserve or whatever to fortify money markets, but the Chinese got their funds from reserves to fortify some kind of a new trade settlement system. Well, I've been told by the same source, because he's involved, some of his clients are involved, they're setting up the gold structure for the new trade settlement system. And a common question, I've got about six or seven common questions I resort to with him. And I say, well, when is this thing going to be launched? What are they waiting for? And he said, they're waiting for the Western banking system and currency system, which is built upon the bonds that are collapsing. They're waiting for the Western financial and banking system to collapse. And then almost overnight, like within a week, this new trade settlement system that's non-dollar will spring into action, and it will have a gold core. And the gold core will make sure that the gold price per ounce is over $7,000.
Yeah,
that's the agreement of the gold core for trade settlement.
I would say it's probably even double that once it's realized how little gold there actually is.
Yeah. Just to start off.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, and if you think about it, again, if we can see it, Jim, and everybody, they all can as well, they being the Russians or the Chinese or all of the creditor nations, let's put it that way, they may have gotten their, not necessarily caught with their pants down or caught looking the other way in 2008, but to some extent that may have surprised them and they recognize, holy crap, we didn't do anything wrong here. But we're the ones with our economies impaled because of these damn Western bankers. And so they've taken the last 4 years to, recognizing that the failure is coming, they've taken the last 4 years to get their own personal shit together so that when the collapse does happen, they just can immediately implement this new system and mitigate the damage to their own economies as much as they can. I mean, that sounds reasonable, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I try to think of two different types of analogies. Imagine you've got an old legacy software system, and you guys have been working for 18 months on a new legacy software system that, you know, handles all your inventory and sales and gets everything coordinated. Well, gee, you want to make the switch over. So you're waiting for an event, and then you decide, okay, we're not going to wait anymore on the event. On September 1st, we're going to roll over into the new system, and we might need 24 hours to roll into it. Well, that's the same sort of thing that we've got here. Or you might have some kind of a physical system that's not software, and you just completely change over, but you need a few days. It's always harder with physical. This is going to be complicated. They're waiting for the Western banking system and its financial structure to collapse. How's it going so far?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's well along.
Yeah.
Just look at some of the central bank actions in the last several weeks. Well, gosh, if you go back maybe 3 months, you saw Draghi and his stillborn baby, the long-term financial operations, those LTFO bonds, they were dead in 30 days.
Yeah.
Now you've got the clown from Goldman Sachs, Draghi, again from the castle at the Euro Central Bank. Oh, by the way, the Euro Central Bank is building a new castle, except that the progress for construction has been halted. We're talking about a big, like 50, 70-story building. It's halted for the last 3 months from lack of funding. The Euro Central Bank building is halted for construction.
That should tell you everything you need to know right there.
Well, Draghi announced, I think 2 weeks ago, that he's going to put a cap on all the sovereign bonds. Well, let me understand this. So Italian bonds cannot get over 6%. Spanish bonds cannot get over 6%. Gee, that sounds like a fair market and a stable system,
yeah.
Mario.
Rent controls never work either.
Oh, and now you've got our own clown, Bernanke, who's trying. I think this Jackson Hole conference, it's a conference of losers. It's a conference of apologists who are making excuses for why there's been no solution for 3 full years at 0%. Well, I got news for you. 0%'s not a stimulus. It's a wet blanket. It's wrecking the profit margins, and it's ruining pensioners, and it's ruining all pension accounts. You can't say the cost of money is zero and expect your economy to expand. It's a false price. Imagine what happens if you open a lemonade stand and offer it at zero. It doesn't last very long. Everything is screwed up. You got a central bank that's encouraging the big banks of New York to go out and borrow and borrow and, you know, put on the treasury carry trade by borrowing at zero and investing it at 2% and 3% on the 10 and 30 year. But gee, be sure not to lend your money out. Be sure to keep it as excess reserves at the Fed. That's not a solution. That's a clown show.
That's canned candy.
Guys don't have any answers, Turd. They don't have any answers. And now Japan is desperate because the yen currency is going up again. Gee, haven't they had three QEs so far this year? Not one of them stuck. These are not solutions. They're desperate measures to pour gasoline on fires or to throw wet blankets on economies. They kill everything. Just give it enough time. The Japanese are buying treasury bonds now at a pace equal to what China is selling. So net Asia, no change. And what does that mean? The Fed is buying over 80 to 90% of all new treasury bonds issued. And you got clowns arguing, even in the gold community. I call them nitwits. They're arguing whether there's going to be another QE.
Yeah.
It never stopped.
Right.
80 to 90% of all treasuries are bought by the Fed, yet they're wondering when the next bond monetization announcement is going to be. Well, sorry, I don't need a billboard to tell me it never stopped. I'm not stupid.
No, that's absolutely right. No, that's you're 100% correct. We call it covert or overt quantitative easing. All they're talking about is whether they're just going to broadcast it and publicly announce that they're doing it.
Well, there's a little twist that you added a week ago, and it was a great article. The Fed might have run out of short-term treasury bills with which to do their operation twist. And that means, and this gets to a sophisticated topic, but it's very important, of whether the Fed's bond buying is going to be sterilized or unsterilized. What I mean by that is, if they just introduce new money from thin air off the printing press and buy treasury bonds, that's unsterilized. It came from nowhere. However, Operation Twist has been using the Fed's supply in inventory on their balance sheet of short-term treasury bills. They sell the treasury bill, they buy a treasury bond. They sell short-term, they buy long-term. That's sterilized. So there's no net new money flowing in on a giant basis. They're about to go unsterilized again, and that's the essence of their statement, but they'll never state it that way. Mm-hmm. Oh, I tell you, this is so scary. I'd like to get to this one of the scariest topics of all. Maybe we're running out of time, but it's your show. But this issue about Saudi Arabia and the petrodollar.
I'm tempted to say, well, that's all for today at TFMR, and then we can record that part, and I can put it on Turd Talks Metals. I bet everybody'd like that. But we are running a little bit towards the end here. I think we're at about maybe 50 minutes, and though it's a holiday weekend, and I think most folks can probably break this up and listen to it in parts because they've got 3 days to do it. But you have teased us, and I have been talking a lot about crude. So why don't we go there for just a couple of minutes, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay. I'm not going to get into, commitment of traders and all that, like you probably do, who's short and who's long. I'm going to get to a story that's really not properly covered in the press. About a month ago, we got some news that some high-level people in the Assad regime of Syria, the brother-in-law of Assad, was killed in a bomb.
Right.
Okay, and, people might have put two and two together thinking, well, it's probably some Western security guys or probably some ally of the U.S. that is good at that sort of thing. Well, there's another potential angle to that, because I don't have 100% certain information, but I'm being told by certain reliable people that Saudi Arabia might have been involved in more than one of the incidents inside Syria. And for anyone who knows the details of who the players are in both Lebanon and Syria, there is one extremely powerful, they're not huge, but they're very competent at what they do. They're called Hezbollah.
Right.
Hezbollah might have done a retaliation in taking out Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia.
Well, he's the guy that no one's heard from for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, there was a story with a photo of Bandar last week or 10 days ago, and I checked with some source that I have in the Persian Gulf, someone who actually has a business there, and he wrote back within 24 hours and said, it's a doctored photograph, it's all false. Everybody's talking about how Bandar is gone. He's dead. Now, Bandar's got a nickname. They call him Bandar Bush because he's such good friends with the Bush family. His role, his position, was head of minister of security for Saudi Arabia. I've been told by that same person I checked with, this has been going on for a year. He said the Saudi Arabian rule, their regime, is now unstable. He said that in the middle of 2011. He said, look for the instability to creep up from Yemen.
Might
also, he said, I think they're going to fend it off on any instability from Iran, but there are a lot of wild cards. And I said, you mean like the crazies among the Arab world? I mean like Hezbollah and... That means party of God in Arabic.
Yep.
He said, well, there are two or three groups, and Hezbollah is only maybe the most violent of them. So now I'm hearing that Bandar is dead. They're not admitting it, and maybe Hezbollah is not done. He told me, I got to be delicate here, he told me just a week ago that there are a lot of people making decisions to bug out
and get away,
well, of the neighboring countries. They call them the Persian Gulf, you know, Oman.
Yeah, Arab Emirates and that kind of place. Yeah.
UAE, you know, you can go on and on. There are a lot of little countries there. Kuwait. Mm-hmm. Kuwait's the farthest to the north. But there's some real big business centers in, like, well, there's a big naval center in Qatar.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
There's some big banking centers in UAE. UAE is unique, I think, because it's more like city-states bound together. But a lot of them are bugging out, and some decisions have been made since the Bandar, I don't know what to call it, killing?
Assassination?
Assassination that's not been confirmed. All right, well, if that's taking place, he said... He made a statement. I said, well, what about stability inside the Saudi regime? And he said, it's all coming apart. And I said, are they leaving town? Are the Saudi royals moving to L.A. and Switzerland? He said, no, Spain.
That's a rather specific answer that makes you think that he's really on to something.
Well, they're some of his clients.
Wow.
He's not speaking third hand here. I got two or three sources. They're very valuable to me. And, you know, I don't know where I'd be without them because they tip me off and I shape some of my analysis around the assumptions that they build, that they offer me, that I build upon. They're not something, they're more like hypotheses. They're planks. They're
right.
Constructs.
Out of the box thinking. I mean, that's why your newsletter is so valuable, is you think a couple steps ahead as to what might be coming rather than just simply reacting to the news that has already happened.
Well, in 2008, he told me that they were building all kinds of mansions around L.A. I'm talking about Saudi royals.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, like 2010, he's telling me, oh, they're building all kinds of stuff in Switzerland. And I said, well, wait a minute. I can't see these guys in white robes living in a winter. And he said, neither can I. I don't think that's going to last long. I think they're more like visiting Switzerland. And then last year he said, they've started moving into Spain. And can you blame them? Look at the housing prices.
Sure. They could buy the whole country on the cheap.
Oh, golly. So, you know, they're going to close off beaches so they can put their little palaces there. What they did in L.A. was they would buy four properties in a row that were these mansions. I mean, like 20-room mansions. And they'd pay huge amounts of money, like, you know, $80 million per man. attention. And what they did, and this is incredible, they only did it for a few of their own. They leveled the mansions in order to put a super Arab mansion
in.
Like with 80 bedrooms and 200 rooms and 18 garages and a staff of protection, you know, security guys. So they would move out 4 and 5 mansions to make one super Arab mansion. And then something happened. Something broke in 09. I don't know what it was. I think that was when they realized the U.S. empire is seeing a sunset and they couldn't be protected by the U.S. anymore. And furthermore, there was a 2010 Easter weekend conference of Arab billionaires in, I think it was Abu Dhabi. And they decided there, the Saudis decided there, that the Russians and Chinese were going to be the protectors in the Persian Gulf to keep the Saudi regime in place. And now I think that things are coming apart from the inside.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Well, imagine the impact if Saudi falls. There goes the petrodollar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, obviously, I've read in a number of places where Saudi and those Gulf states have inserted, if you will, special forces troops and supplies and arms to try to topple Assad because of his connection with Iran and Saudi and Iran being essentially enemies at this point. So they try to, they get a little too aggressive in trying to topple Assad, and the Iran and Syria proxy Hezbollah comes back and comes after Saudi, and now Saudi's teetering, and I don't think anybody, I mean, we're all sitting there factoring what could happen to crude and what kind of oil shock would that do to the global economy, and would that push everything over the edge if there's a war? Nobody is talking about some complete civil war breakdown, whatever, in Saudi Arabia. That you want to talk about the black swan that nobody sees.
Ooh. That is it. I have one little alteration in my viewpoint. I believe Hezbollah has a headquarters in Lebanon.
Yes.
Not Iran.
Well,
they have offices in Iran, but right. I think their center is Lebanon and Syria.
It's exactly in Lebanon and even southern Lebanon, but I think it is assumed that most of the funding for Hezbollah comes from Iran. But
it could. I don't know. I'm not an expert in that, but
I know.
I don't regard it as an Iranian tool. I regard it as an Arab tool, and it's got a lot of alliances with Iran.
And that's probably true too.
But, you know, I'm not an expert in that. I'm not a strat for global security analyst type. I'm not. I just try to piece it together like a jackass.
Yeah, like
but
anything else.
If Saudi has these problems from inside, they're going to start saying, hey, look, you know, we don't want to cause any problems out there for the rest of the world. Whatever you've got to buy our oil, that's fine with us. You want it to be yen? You want it to be euros, Swiss franc, British pound?
Gold.
We don't care. As long as you buy our oil and help us to hold things together.
Yeah.
And there goes the petrodollar. And, you know, things are so backward, Turd. In the last 10 years, what you've got is the financial sector of the United States and London dictating bond speculation, mortgage bonds, now sovereign bonds and derivatives that back them up. And therefore, the banks of the world have had U.S. treasuries as their reserve. It's all backwards. It should be based on trade. Whatever the trade is, and crude oil is the biggest item traded. But you've also got base metals out of South America.
Yeah.
You've got all kinds of things. Cars out of Asia. Domestic electronics out of – home electronics out of Asia. So as trade – gets more and more non-dollar, with the big tipping point being Saudi crude oil, you're going to see the dollar as a global reserve go away because it's not going to be necessary in the banking systems to make the trade payment work.
Yes, and as that relates to just a flat numbers basis, everyone listening should think of that as just being less demand for dollars. I mean, if you just want to break it as simply as you can to supply and demand, we have an ever-increasing supply of dollars to fund all these deficits and all the banking issues and everything else. But then that, I guess your part of your story means far less demand for dollars. And if you've got increasing supply and dropping demand, you obviously have a rapidly falling price and value. Uh-oh. Here we are. There we are. You're back. That was our final little 10-second loss of the jackass. But you're back.
Yeah, but you were talking during that, which is fine. I know what roughly you were saying. Yes, the demand for trade settlement is going to go away, not completely. But the tipping point is when Saudi oil is not required to be paid for in dollars. When that happens, the United States dollar and the domestic holders of dollars are going to have to bid up whatever's necessary to buy what they want. And that's how you have the colossal dollar decline. That's how you have the colossal price inflation problem within the domestic United States. I'm hearing that dollars held outside the United States will be honored. They'll be honored for exchange. Dollars held inside the United States will be devalued without mercy.
That sounds right to me.
But it's going to take time, and I don't know when. But, you know, let's face it. Things are accelerating.
Yes.
I like that when people say, oh, it'll take a long time, I say, well, what's happened in the last 6 months? What's happened in the last 3 months?
Or if you want to go back further and just think, how has the world changed just in the last 4 years, 3 years, 5 years?
Or 1 year.
But then as you shorten it, yes, it's as dramatic as you even get shorter. But
wasn't it 2 years ago that the Greek bond problem came out 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Have they made any progress on these problems?
Yeah, really.
I submit they're not even trying.
Well,
they're
Jim,
not trying. What they're doing is preserving power. You and I know this. They're preserving power, preserving the banks, preserving the bonds. They don't want liquidation because that means their power is liquidated. They're not trying to solve anything. These bankers in Jackson Hole are not coming up with solutions for anything except holding on to power.
Just to perpetuate as long as they can. And you have, obviously, the timing of this little talk is perfect because we're heading into September now. Everybody is going to be paying attention again. Everybody's back from holiday or vacation. And the world's about to get even more interesting, if you will. And I think Jim here has given everybody in Turdville a lot to think about over this 3-day weekend, whether it's a collapse of a Morgan Stanley, a JP Morgan, or some big bank being the first domino to send the whole thing, or you know, the first card to fall over in the house of cards. But then that leads into the story of allocated gold and how little there is, how little gold there really is in the West.
Let's not leave out the money market, the run on money market.
We haven't even touched on that.
Didn't even get to it. You wanted to, but it basically it's the last source of liquidity for the major banks, and they're putting on restrictions that you know can't take all of your out. You got to maintain a minimum balance at risk, and they're trying to put restrictions on moving your money markets out because it's all the equity they've got left in these insolvent banks.
Yep, and it's essentially an intra-bank capital control, where when we think of capital controls, we think about money going from country to country. This is just a way to keep it within country and within the system, within certain banks.
Well, yeah, but you need to focus on that. These money market funds are the last acreage of liquidity for the banks.
Yes.
You take them away and the banks go bust like laymen. You can't have a run on these money markets without destroying the big banks that we think are zombies forever. They're not zombies forever. They're zombies until the money markets go away. So they're putting restrictions on. Oh, I'll tell you, there's so many areas. These bankers, they need 30 fingers to fill the holes in the dike. They don't have 30 fingers.
No, exactly. And it's really only going to take one. And I guess that's what ultimately the point where that I was driving toward. Is you lay out all of these potential scenarios that are going to be the first card to get pulled out of the house, and one of them is going to come, whether it is...
I think it already has.
Well, it already has, yes. Well, and that's true, too, and that kind of got it all facilitated.
The king of all the controversies that opens up every banking problem conceivable. Now they've got the ability to go in, investigate with discovery of documents and all kinds of testimony. And worse, the participants that work together in LIBOR are not communicating with each other because of the collusion charges under their own advice from counsel. So don't expect these mergers that Steve Quayle's talking about. It's going to be very difficult to pull off. They're not talking to each other. To do a merger, you need to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's probably enough, Tur. We hit on a lot of things.
Well, I tell you, and like I said, I just think the timing couldn't be better because everybody's got to have their game face on come Tuesday, and we've certainly given everybody a lot to think about. There's no doubt about that. So I want to thank you on the behalf of everybody for giving us this much time, Jim. Tell everybody quickly, I guess, about Golden Jackass and the Hat Trick Letter and where they go. I'll obviously provide links, but tell them how often you write and how frequently they can expect to hear from you and where to go to sign up.
Okay, real quickly, I don't need to go into big depth, but the website name is www.goldenjackass.com. No spaces, underlines, or anything. Goldenjackass.com. The newsletter is called The Hat Trick Letter. My public articles are shameless promotional pieces to gather new subscribers. I got two new today, two new yesterday. Things are moving along. A lot of newsletter writers are having great difficulty. I'm treading water at a nice level. I'm very pleased what's going on. I post two reports per month. One I call the Money War Report. They can call it a financial crisis all they want. This is a money war. This is a war over money. This is a war over control of currencies.
Yeah.
The Money War Report is one. The other one hasn't changed name or focus at all. It's called the Golden Currency Report. I focus on a lot of different low-level stories, like, you know, countries accumulating gold, problems in the banking system in Turkey, a lot of different individual stories I cover in the Gold Report. The higher level banking wars, monetary war, bond wars, all the big bond fraud, I cover in the Money War Report. So those two come out every month. Been doing this now. I just had my 100th anniversary in July. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a huge challenge. It gives me a headache sometimes trying to keep track of all the facts and figures. I try to keep my spiral notebooks, but I'm very indebted to about 30 people who know who they are, and we're kind of a big clan. It's about four different circles. You know, we CC each other on emails, and I try to cross-pollinate one ring of email guys to another ring of email guys, and I get invited to another, and I say, all right, let me introduce a couple of different people who are leaders of the other rings. And before you know it, you got five, six different rings, and 30 people are really important for sending information and articles. And, oh, I got some inside scoop. I got a subscriber who's in PNB Paribas who, for instance, said 2 weeks ago that ICBC, the big bank of China, is now putting a bid on gold. They were nowhere there before. It was only J.P. Morgan and Deutsche Bank before. Now it's ICBC. Well, that's big.
Yeah.
And I've got another subscriber who's got a friend whose father's in Morgan Stanley. So it's just one big collection. But I'm very grateful to about 30 people for lots and lots of stories and shared information. People can sign up. I got 6 month subscriptions for a very competitive price, and you know, I hope people sign up. Well, most of the public articles have a link.
And as I said, Jim, I what's terrific about the work you do is you have access to all these different points of information and different streams of information. But as your picture shows on the side here, you've got a big enough brain to begin connecting the dots and thinking outside the box as to what it all means. And I think it's invaluable. So again, thank you for spending some time. I hope you're able to get your game face on come Tuesday as well. And hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Okay, we'll know when, won't we?
Yeah, that's probably the case, Jim. Have a great weekend, my friend.
Thanks for having me.